My name is Taco. I want to say shout out to all the raccoons on campus. You're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM on Burnaby.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
COVID pandemic is changing our world and changing our lives in ways that we hope will be positive, important, and enduring. The truth is that we probably will derive more pandemic insight from scrutinizing the past than from speculating about the future, because no one pandemic is entirely separate from any other. In this deep dialogue, we'll meet a microscopic invader, the novel coronavirus, and come to know its most famous predecessors in the history of human pandemic diseases. We'll become acquainted with our microscopic defenders, the infinitesimal but ferocious warriors of the human immune system, which in a valiant effort to save the body has, in the past, prior to the discovery of antibiotics, tragically killed us in the process. So join us as together we search for insight into this microscopic new enemy that is infecting us with such audacity, with our guest, Dr. Barbara Hort. Barbara E. Hort is a Jungian counselor and provides consultation and training in the theatrical practice of psychodramaturgy, which can be used by performing artists to enhance their storytelling. She's the author of Unholy Hungers, Encountering the Psychic Vampire in Ourselves and Others, and Hollow Crown of Fire, A Discovery of Meaning in the Coronavirus Pandemic and Its Predecessors. So join us for the next hour as we explore the coronavirus and how it's changed our lives, our relationships, and our world with our guest, Dr. Barbara E. Hort. I'm speaking with Barbara in her home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Barbara, welcome.
Thank you very much, Justine.
This book has gone into so many things that I have not understood or known in our history. And I love how you bring some mythology into it and help us to understand what this pandemic might be about and connecting it with previous pandemics. So first, I would love for you to say something about the present pandemic, the coronavirus, and how is it different from other pandemics?
For one thing, we know a great deal more about the coronavirus than anyone knew about preceding diseases. Obviously, during the Black Death of plague, during the plague of Justinian, during the plural pandemics in the New World after Columbus and the conquistadors came. But even they knew very little about what was going on. Those diseases, sometimes they thought it was God or the gods visiting curses upon them. Even in 1918, however, when we did have the notion about diseases, they didn't know about viruses. They couldn't see them. They had no way of identifying them. They were looking for a bacterium. And in fact, they couldn't see viruses until 1931. So 15 years after the 1918 flu. So we actually know a lot more about the disease itself, and the information spreads a lot faster. What's interesting is that a lot of the dynamics in communication and the way that we have emotionally responded to the pandemic is really very similar to what has happened to humanity in the historical pandemics, which I find not surprising in some ways, but very important and fascinating in terms of what we have to learn about the meanings of pandemic disease.
But some of the things that we've learned about this particular, the novel coronavirus, is that makes it difficult in these times, is that, like, for instance, the symptoms of the virus don't show up right away. So it might be spreading before we even know that we have it. So that's one. Yes. And also another, I think that you mentioned in your writings is about how it infects different parts of the body. So at first they said, oh, this is a respiratory virus, but then it infects the liver. So say something about the diversity of this virus.
Right. It's kind of a pentathlete, actually. It is a vascular virus. It moves through the vascular system. It attaches to these little ACE2 proteins, receptors, that line every part of the vascular system. That means it can go to all of our major organs, and it seems to randomly choose which one it settles in, kind of sets up camp in. It can even get to, can affect our brains because of the way our immune systems respond to the virus. I'm saying all of this not as a medical professional, but I've had wonderful sources that have educated me about this. And that's part of what makes the virus so tricky. It does primarily enter our bodies through our respiratory tracts. That's why they called it acute respiratory syndrome, but it is not a respiratory virus. Then there's a huge variation in the way that our immune systems respond to it. Some immune systems overreact. Some don't seem to react at all, and sometimes they react in a delayed way, and some form these systemic clotting and can kill young people very quickly. Sometimes people who seem to be ill, like people with asthma, don't necessarily seem to be taken down by this virus more than other people. So it is a remarkable opponent for those who are trying to come to terms with how we should manage it and what we should do about it. It is very novel in that sense as an invader.
I wrote, when we were all sheltering in place, I wrote about how, wow, this little microscopic thing that we can't even see with our naked eyes could affect the entire planet. I mean, we all came to a standstill. And I just found that remarkable. And I know that you write about how in human consciousness, we don't pay attention to the microscopic. We look at the big things like wars or droughts or climate change or whatever it is. But do you have any comment on that?
Yes. One of the reasons I wrote the book was because I was interested in the enormous power of pandemic disease. It's pretty generally thought that more people have died in human history of pandemic disease than all wars and natural disasters combined. However, pandemic disease has received minimal attention compared to all of those events which we consider huge in human affairs. Wars get a lot of attention, of course. And we also don't give a lot of attention to little tiny things. And, you know, the title of the book, Hollow Crown of Fire, comes from a famous soliloquy from William Shakespeare, his life and death of King Richard II. And at the end of the play, Richard, the king, and his friends are going to be killed. He has lost power. He hasn't been such a great king, and he's been quite narcissistic and considered himself above everything, including death. And then he realizes death is coming for him, and he says, "Nothing can we call our own but death." Then later he says, "For within the hollow crown that rounds the mortal temples of a king keeps death his court." Then later he says, "We consider ourselves walled in this flesh of brass, impregnable, and death lets us do that, but comes at last and with a little pin bores through that castle wall and farewell, king." And basically what Shakespeare is saying is that we think we are impenetrable and impervious, but in the end, the little pin bores through. Isn't that what a virus or a bacterium does, that they bores through and then we are taken down by the things we cannot even see?
Wow. Yes. yeah. Shakespeare really, really captured it, really, really captured it. And you have followed through with the title of your book, Hollow Crown of Fire. This reminds me of going back to earlier pandemics. And one in particular, I had no idea. We all are looking for meaning in global events, so to speak, and we're affected by this. We continue to be affected. And like you mentioned in your writing how we don't know the butterfly we're going to become from all this chaos we're experiencing right now collectively. But going back to an earlier one, which is the time of Justinian, and the implications that came out of that. So I'd love for you to share with us a bit about the Justinian pandemic, which was, I believe, in 527 CE, Common Era, so 527 to 65 CE. So what was that about, and how did that affect us?
Mm-hmm. Well, Justinian was an emperor. His center was in Constantinople. He waged a huge campaign to unite this disparate group of nations, if you will, or countries, because he wanted to recreate the Roman Empire. And he basically had pretty much accomplished that by 541, which was the real eruption of this disease, which had been creeping toward Constantinople, but he had dismissed the rumors and just kept waging war. And he was a pretty determined guy, a brutal conqueror. And then the plague erupted, and it started killing people. We have a great account of what was happening in Constantinople from a historian named Procopius. That sounds very much like the accounts of the Black Death, people being stacked like cordwood, bodies being stacked like cordwood in any place they could find. There are some historians who have said, oh, that plague was inconsequential. It didn't kill that many people.
Well, let's talk actually, about that in just one moment, exactly okay. What happened after that. So I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dr. Barbara E. Hort, and she is the author of Hollow Crown of Fire, A Discovery of Meaning in the Coronavirus Pandemic and Its Predecessors. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, barbarahort.com, and she spells her last name H-O-R-T. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Barbara Hort, and we're going back to earlier pandemics and their meaning and their consequences. So we're talking about Justinian. So where are we in that? Lots of people died. You just said.
I said that a lot of people died, but there are some historians who have recently said, well, not that many people died. It wasn't that big a deal, not compared to the Black Death. Later in the 14th century. But in point of fact, other historians have pointed out that the people who died were the people who were in the populated centers. That's how plague kills, where there were rats and concentrations of people. And in an organization of society organized like a Roman Empire, which was what Justinian was creating, the hubs of control are in the cities. So the people who died were the ones who were the centers of power and control and authority for the empire. So when they died, the empire died. And for the next 500 years, which just, you know, that's like from when Columbus landed to like your breakfast of cornflakes this morning, right? A long time. All of Europe was sort of in chaos. I mean, there were tiny countries warring among themselves. No overarching law, no overarching system of transport, commerce, government, none of that. We used to call that time the Dark Ages. That is not politically correct from a historical point of view anymore. We call it the Early Middle Ages, but it was a really tough time to be alive. Out of that time came independent nation states, France, Italy, Germany, England. The era of the empire in Europe was over. And that is surely one of the consequences of the plague of Justinian. It broke the empire age, at least for Europe. So one of the problems with pandemic disease is that it takes a long time to see consequences. But one kind of consequence is that kind of consequence. We can see that with various pandemics. And we can also see psychological changes when we look at the mythologies, like how is it that people react to pandemic disease? And we can see commonalities in the myths, the stories that become very important to the cultures of the people who are living through those pandemics. And that tells us something else about how pandemic changes human beings.
So what is an example of a cultural myth at that time that applies?
Well, there, I'll give you a comparison, actually, because they're similar. At that time, one of the myths that was still prevalent was the myth of Persephone, the myth in which we have the daughter of the mother goddess. This is Greek mythology, but it still prevailed in these Eleusinian mysteries. It was of a young girl who's innocent and picking flowers, and then the ground cracks open, and this man driving a black chariot, black horses, dressed in black, grabs her, takes her down into Hades, which is not hell, but the underworld. She's abducted. And in that place, she becomes transformed. We don't have to go into all the detail, but basically, once she is able to come back up, she's sort of rescued, she does something which allows her to spend half the rest of her life in Hades, where she's the queen, and half in the upper world, the only deity.
I think, Barbara, that you point out that Persephone is the only goddess that actually chose that profound transformation.
Yes.
And to dwell in both the lower and the upper world. I never understood that before.
Oh, really? Yes. She is the only deity that lives in both realms, and she chooses it. She chooses essentially to eat 6 pomegranate seeds, because if she eats something in Hades, it means she has to return there. I mean, 6 months of the year, fall and winter, she lives in Hades, where she's queen of inner depth and wisdom and great wealth and darkness. And then 6 months of the year, she lives up in the spring and summer in the upper world, where she's in the light. So she is considered by some to be the goddess of transformation and the goddess of awakening and illumination. And that myth is part of the Eleusinian mystery myth, the descent and the discovery of truth, personal truth, and then the return as a new, she didn't actually even have a name when she descended. And when she comes back, the great crone goddess Hecate names her Persephone. So that myth, very important myth in that early age. Later in the 14th century, just before the Black Death comes, so in 1327, Dante publishes the Divine Comedy. And the first book of the Divine Comedy is the Inferno, and it begins with a descent into hell, basically, down to the 10th circle of hell, and then through purgatory, and then to the to paradise. And in that great story, one of the great stories of human literature, we see the same thing, where Dante comes to a huge awakening, many different kinds of awakening, and emerges a transformed being. And that story was hugely important through the era of the Black Death and beyond it. So there, this is true for other pandemic stories, but the sense of descending into darkness, finding one's personal identity, new identity and truth, and then emerging the same but different, kind of like the caterpillar weaves the chrysalis, is transformed, digests itself really, and then reconforms as a butterfly and emerges, if it survives, and comes out the same cells, but in a different configuration, and now with wings. All of those images are all very consistent with the imagery that seems to come up during these times. And I think there are some people who have gone through and are still going through the lockdown, the pandemic, a reconsideration of who am I really? There was the before, and now there's the inside time, which is very hard, painful for some people. And now I'm emerging as somebody different, really, the same, but different, same cells, different configuration.
It's hard to know exactly where we are when we're right in the midst of it, because we're still, I think, culturally in the descent, so to speak, or in the underworld. And I just would love for you to say some of the different ways that that may not be so helpful in responding to this pandemic or any pandemic that went before. So if you could talk about some of the ways that we as human beings respond that are not helpful.
Yes. There's a chapter in which I talk about human behaviors as part of the defenders against the invader of the pandemic. So the whole book is set up like it's a drama, right? There's the invading protagonist of the pandemic disease, and then the human immune system is one set of defenders, and then our human behaviors are another. Sometimes the immune system sabotages us. Sometimes our behaviors sabotage us. You know, we defend not always effectively, but sometimes effectively. Among the behaviors that are not so effective would be things like denial. So to say, oh, it's a hoax. There's no pandemic. It's not that bad. It's just the flu. That would be one. Another one is displacement. So that would be to say it's somebody else's fault. You know, it's the Kung flu. They're making a big deal out of it. There's a virus, but it's not as big a deal as they're making out of it. Another one is to say, well, there's a flu, but if I just party enough, I can just party my way right through it. People certainly did that during the Black Death. That's what the whole, you know, Boccaccio with this Decameron, partying your way through the Black Death. Doesn't work, but it's a nice idea. Actually, Edgar Allan Poe wrote a book about that too, right? The Mask of the Red Death. So, you know, that's what human beings sometimes do, go out and party on the beaches in Florida or the bars in Texas, wherever they are. So all of these are, they are human responses to stress, basically. And there's a longer list than that, but all of them are things that human beings have always done. We have some other, sometimes we just wall up and act like we don't care and just keep marching along. That's actually sometimes can be helpful. It's what healthcare workers have to do. It's like, I'm about to go and risk my life to care for people. I'm just not going to feel my feelings until later. And then they go and save lives.
During the Black Plague, Southern England was devastated, but there was a chronicle that someone made in Farnham, England. And somehow that chronicle showed, even though they had a lot of deaths, that they worked through it by not going into that kind of denial. Can you say something about that particular instance and how they survived as a community?
Sure. Yes. Well, I wish we knew more about them, but what we have are from what they call the pipe rolls. That their reeve is a steward of a big manorial estate, basically. And his name was John Runowick. And we know his name, and we know that he was probably about 30 years old. And in many parts of that part of Southeast England, the death rates were terrible. There was a lot of panic. There might have been an anthrax epidemic at the same time. Some areas like Norwich had 90% death rates. People were basically rioting, killing each other, slaughtering their animals. It was all pandemic is bad, but this was a particularly hellish place. Somehow in this hundred at Farnham, this estate that John Runowick was stewarding, that didn't happen. And it wasn't that he was a severe boss, because that didn't work during the Black Death. It was like, oh, death is coming. But somehow he kept his 3,000 people farming and kept this a community. They just lived there, you know, and they were all men, women, children, animal husbanding their animals and taking care of the buildings. And he was there for 4 years, the worst years of the Black Death. They lost half of the people, but they had no violence. They had no panicking. They just kept running the farm.
I mean, they still had, death was still among them, but
50% of them died. Somehow they kept the community just going, they kept calm and carried on, you know.
Yes, right.
Sort of like as the English did, of course, the Second World War. It was the same thing. We're just going to keep living. And I use him as a great model for what kind of leadership is most beneficial in the face of any disaster, but particularly a pandemic, is to keep moving forward, be calm, care for each other. They had to have cared for each other and their animals and just keep on. And as a result, they had peace in that little place.
That's a great example. I'm speaking with Dr. Barbara E. Hort, and she's the author of Hollow Crown of Fire, A Discovery of Meaning in the Coronavirus Pandemic and Its Predecessors. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Barbara E. Hort, and she's the author of Hollow Crown, a